Hello there, everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of Psyched to be with you with my very special guest, and I'm pleased to say friend, Marco, or you may know him as Solid Snake. That's Marco in Portuguese. I don't know why I said it in English as well. We had a great chat. Software development, we talked about football and the importance of games as like an individual growing up, especially like Metal Gear Solid in Marco's case. It was just such a good chat. It really was just me sitting down and chatting with a friend for a couple hours, really. But I hope you take a lot about it. One of the big things we talked about was modding in an active Twitch community, and that's really interesting. So I really hope you enjoy it. I had a great time, and yeah, enjoy the rest of the episode. Take it easy. Hello there, everybody, and welcome to Psyched to be with you, episode 9. This one is going to be an absolute banger. It is a pleasure and a privilege to share the stage with not only a very special guest, but also someone I'm very privileged to call a friend. So we've spoken for many, many hours outside the show. I want to say that as a disclosure before we get started. I will also apologize for the fact that I sound very nasally. I've got what we call in the business fresh as flu, as it's October 2021 at the time of recording, so there's sweet FA I can do about that. Without further ado, my special guest, would you please introduce yourself and tell us what you do and why you do it?
Well, hello. First of all, thank you for having me on the show. Big fan. And as you said, yeah, we're mates. My name is Marco. Or in Portuguese, Marco. I don't know why I said it in English. on Twitch, people know me as Solid. I'm Solid Snake. I don't know. It's hard to talk about me. I'm a 30-year-old software engineer. I stream occasionally. I do play footy. I like music. I like movies. I like loads of stuff. And yeah, I think that's about it for a small introduction. I think we'll get in deep later.
Awesome stuff. So right at the top then, software engineer. What's that when it's at home?
Oh, sorry, I didn't get it.
So what is a software engineer? Tell us for someone that doesn't know.
Oh yeah, it's interesting. It's it's basically it depends. For me, it's a different experience than it might be for another software engineer. A lot of software engineers like to be very technical and very formal. They like to be called engineers. And then there's that's like the 5%, I'd say. And then there's like the whole 95% that are like me. That's more like very casual. We're just developers. We just like to do our job and we don't like the formal, Mr. Engineer, all that stuff. It just feels weird for me. I can go back to the early days when I was like in fourth grade. I was very curious boy. I heard about computers and I thought it was pretty cool. I actually took a little course when I was like in fifth grade or something to learn how to use Office and create an email, the basic stuff, basically. So I was really dead on being an engineer. Currently, I work in a company that works with telecommunications. We do multiple apps that help. How do I put this? That they help manage your network. Okay. You can see where your antennas are, how's your signal, all that sort of stuff. That's what we do. And then inside the organization, of course, that's where I work. And I basically do a little bit of everything because software engineer is a very, a very vague position to call someone, because you can be front-end developer, you can be a back-end developer, you can be QA tester, you can be QA analytic. There's a whole big spectrum of types of jobs that you can do. I'll do a little bit of everything. Like I started as a front-end developer. That's basically someone that just builds what you see in a web page and everything, like the user interface, the buttons you press, the scrolls you do, the text you type. Mm-hmm. That's basically what a front-end engineer does. Then I jumped to backend engineer because that's what I loved the most at the time. I was like, ah, this is, sounds really cool. I like to work on the shadows and how basically a backend guy is the one that makes everything work behind the scenes, like the connections with your databases, how everything, how the information goes by from a click of the button to doing the action that you actually wanted to do, all that sort of stuff. And then I jumped a little bit because I've been in the same company for 6 years, which isn't that common in my line of work since it has been a business that has been booming a lot. People tend to jump from job to job fairly quickly, but not me, though. I like the team that I work with. It's a very friendly environment. I don't have a schedule, per se. I work by objectives. That's how we work. We work in sprints and objectives, and when we complete the objective, your work is done, and then you can look for more, or you can just, you know, take a breather. Sometimes it feels good. I like this type of work. I like the people I work with. When this changes, maybe I'll change too. And I also like that I keep jumping from place to place, so it keeps being interesting. I keep learning everything new. Like I was saying, I did front end, back end, so I became like what you call a full stack developer, which is someone that can develop in every bit of the every part of your application.
So people say to you, "You're stacked."
Yeah, I'm buffed. I'm very stacked. Yeah, yeah.
But for listeners' benefit, Solid is a stacked lad. He's an absolute behemoth of a man.
You are a very kind person. I have a lot of I have too much stack, if I'd say. We're working on it. I'm working on it. But yeah, about the job. Yeah, that's basically it. Since I think it was my boss at the time said I had like a. Everyone kept telling me that's the same way that Twitch happened to me. It was like that I have this big personality and I'm very charismatic, apparently. I don't really see it, but people keep telling me that. So it's like, hey, maybe you should do... So it's not customer service, but it's close. It's customer support. Mm-hmm. I would interact more with the clients and provide a platform that people could bring their problems to, and I'll hear them out, try to help, and I could practice on more languages, which I love. I would love to learn more languages and speak English. And I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. So then I jumped to customer support for like a year or so. And now I'm a QA tester, basically. I jumped to quality assurance, which is basically you test whatever application they want you to test or whatever action they want you to test. And you just have to develop automated tests for it or test them manually, whatever works for you. You just have to guarantee that things work. You know, that sort of thing that you should do in games, but you don't do. Nowadays, you just release them as
day
broken
one patch,
messages.
Baby. Day one patch.
Yeah, the day one patch. That's the big misconception that everyone that works in development has day one patches. Yeah, that doesn't work for companies like ours. If we release something that's truly broken, we would get pretty much fired on the spot because we're messing with people's internet and connections on their cell phones. Like if we, for example, if we do like a big oopsie and we delete like, I'm not going to say it has happened, but
things like this will have happened throughout the history of the internet.
Exactly. It might have happened when I was there or when I wasn't. I might have had some responsibility or not. I'm not going to...
Who knows?
You know, who knows? It's in the ethos of... you know. But yeah, if if we do a mistake, we basically some region of the country that's using our application, it could impact their services at some point. we could disconnect some antennas or something. You might be without network for a couple of hours. It has happened.
So if you're ever if you're listening to this and your mobile service loses signal, you know why.
Yeah.
Someone like Marco has accidentally pressed the wrong button.
It might have happened. I'm not going to say I'm responsible, but I might have been. It is a very, very big possibility, yeah.
Ask no questions, you'll get no lies, you know what I'm saying?
No, No, it is. It is an. How do I say? It is an extra level of pressure, because it's another thing that's a common misconception with software engineering or software development, is that people sometimes don't realize that people that do my job sometimes have to work for hospitals and for radioactive machines, and there the pressure is. How do I say, paramount, I'd say. Like, if you, there's no room for error there. There has been, in the past, some big mistakes, unfortunately, that has cost some lives. And that's a really, you know, that's the ultimate mistake that you can do. So put some respect on the devs' names, you know?
Yeah, fair. No, okay. That, I mean, I knew you were a fairly, very talented guy anyway. So that's just been confirmed. For us, you can very much do it all. I also want to point out you are yet another of the beautiful accents that we've had on this show this season.
I'd say a mishmash of series and movies that I've watched.
No, I think the beautiful Portuguese carries itself through quite nicely.
Thank you. I love the Scouse accent, so right back at you.
I mean, people would say my accent, pardon me, isn't even that Scouse. But, you know.
Oh, it is. I can sense the Scouse there.
So is there any sort of, like, I don't know necessarily if you can, like, by name, but are there any pieces of work that you sort of sit back and go, oh, yeah, I'm really proud of that? Like, professionally speaking, there's something I want to ask you about a bit later on that I know you worked on, like, for fun, but like anything that you sit back in work and you go, yeah, I did that.
No, I don't think there's a specific thing that I develop that I feel like at work that I feel like, yo, that was cool. I think it's more about like the team spirit. Like the team has been together for 4 years, I think, and in this company, a lot, as I said, a lot of people come and go. It is common in our line of work. And I think I'm most proud of that, like the connections we built between... We built a really solid team. Pardon the pun. It's like... it is interesting because my boss at the time, he resigned, or he went for another company. And he went work for another company. And he was a big part of that reason. Like, he made sure we're all, like, very friendly to each other. We work for each other. I think that's the most thing that I'm proud of, is that feeling has kept on, even though he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. We got another person to come by that is basically one of the team, maybe his right arm stepped up. And he was the boss then, and everyone was fine with it because we knew we could trust him. And I think that's it. I think even though I might develop a lot of apps that I might like and enjoy and feel like, yeah, I did a good job there, I think nothing beats like a good team, a good friendship, a bunch of really cool dudes that can hang out after work. Because that's basically what we are at the moment, and that's the thing I'm most proud of. Being your contribution to that is something to be proud of, I think.
I mean, that's really quite amicable, to be fair. That's quite a lovely answer, and I appreciate that. And
I'm not running for a supermodel Miss Universe or something. It's just it's the things that I value the most. You know, I think you know me pretty well, so you know I value friendships a lot. So that's why my brain went straight to that. I much rather have these mates at work than the couple of apps that I've developed, which I'm proud of as well, but not as much as the group, I'd say.
No, that's a great answer. So you told us a little bit about what you like to do when you're not in work. Let's talk about Twitch. So you also stream. Tell us a bit about that.
I do stream.
What do you get up to?
It is interesting. it is a bit of a like most things in my life after work, it is a little bit of a mess. I've never been a very organized guy. I got into Twitch because of our fellow, our link in the past that was the channel that unites us, for a productions.
Yeah.
That's how I got into Twitch. I basically got up there one time when I was watching his channel, and I didn't know what Twitch was. I knew where live streams was, but I just never thought I could do it, and never thought it was my thing. Just like playing my games and just have my fun. And then he was very supportive, and a lot of mates, a lot of people that I met there was like, hey, maybe you should stream. Maybe you should, maybe you have something to say. Maybe you have something different to add to the platform. That's how I got into it. That's how I got roped into it.
Roped into it.
That's basically it. I was just bullied into starting a Twitch stream. I had like this, the worst computer in the world to stream. It was an absolute nightmare. My stream would crash all the time. If I got alerts or if I tried to play a PC game, the stream would just crash. And then I got, I think I'm proud that I got kind of good at it. Like, I understand that it's not an equipment-based thing. I just learned from a lot of people, a lot of streams that I watched. And it has helped me grow as a person. And it is cool to show your personality and made some friends along the way. And that's what I do on my Twitch streams. I just play the games that I want to play. I just, I feel like playing, I don't know, lately I've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn. I never played it, and it was very highly suggested to me because I had, to my recollection, I had no idea that it was a stealth game. Mm-hmm. So I never knew about that. And until someone said, hey, you should play this game because it has stealth. And I'm like, well, that's it. If it has stealth and I'm playing it because I love stealth games, that's my thing. If you don't know by the name, yeah, I'm a big, huge Metal Gear Solid fan. Is my favorite game. That's what I'm playing currently. I'm playing Horizon Zero Dawn. I actually got, more recently, I got gifted FIFA 22, which nice. Is... No, it isn't.
Oh, no.
It isn't. But it was an interesting mate from the stream. It was like, yeah, you know, it is bad, but I kind of want to see what you say about it. Mm. And I was on my vacation. I was like, yeah, I'm just going to bite the bullet, just do a little 1 hour talking about the game. And just, I completely trashed it, which I wouldn't do for a year ago, for example. But now I feel comfortable with it. Like, that's honestly my honest opinion about that game. And I was like, I'm not going to play this again.
I think let's just dial it back a little bit. There's something I want to kind of tap into. So
I jumped into a lot of stones, didn't I?
That's fine. I think the first thing is to say you're the first streamer I've had on the show. Hopefully not the last. I've got plans for later episodes and such. Just try and explain a little bit about like what it is to stream, like a little bit of like what you do, but like what is it to stream? What does that mean?
Oh, I see. Okay. to me, it's just about putting yourself out there. It's just it depends. It depends from person to person. I'd say some people just get in it for the money, or just trying to make a living, or the kids nowadays is just. Bless you. The kids nowadays, they just see all the big bucks that are in streaming. It's just like, hey, I want to play video games for life, and that's kind of my thing. Well, that wasn't the thing for me. For me, streaming is just, it's just a way that you'd play the games I play. I would play them on my own, right? Mm-hmm. I would play them even if I wasn't streaming. It's just the streaming part is just cool that I can share my first experiencing. Playing a game that someone recommended, for example, they're going to love my first reaction to it. And we can share experiences about it, and we can share thoughts. That's the whole thing about streaming for me. It's just getting in front of the camera, talking about stuff that I love. You've been on my stream, so you know most of the time I'm not talking about video games. The conversation derails pretty quickly. So yeah, the streaming is not about, for me, it's not about the game, it's not about the money, it's just about, having your free time with a couple of mates that could be anywhere in the world, and we're just talking about, I don't know, we're just talking about random stuff, and hopefully it is entertaining to the people who watch, and they tune in a lot more, and I get to know them better. I think there's a quite a big perception that it's just the other way around. Like, people just come in to know you. Now, to me, it's just you get to know people a lot. Like, you get to know who chats with you as well. Like, mm-hmm. you get to know more people, too, which is really cool. Because then they start streaming, and then you go check them out, and then you know a lot more about them. And then that's how you make friends, basically. Those yeah, that's the new age friendship, I'd say, which is interesting. It is a very, very cool thing to do. I was a little bit skeptical at first because I didn't think I was going to be confident enough to show my face. Mm-hmm. So that was a little bit of a step. My first few streams, I didn't have a camera. Then I was like, yeah, maybe it's time. It's time to give them what they want. No, it is, because if you think about it, I've been talking with a lot of people that I never saw the face of, and mm-hmm. you kind of get pretty friendly with these peeps. You get to know them a little bit better, and then you realize that you never saw their face, which is kind of weird. You're really good friends with someone, but you've never seen them, which is really weird. So at a certain point, I was like, yeah, maybe they would be interested in see how I look, for better or worse. And
to put a face to a name, as it were.
Yeah, put a face to a name. Exactly. That's the words I'm looking for. Exactly.
No, I think... I think I basically
said everything about why I stream, what it is for me.
It's a good answer. And I mean, it kind of like a little bit of a snare on my part, I guess, because, you know, like, we'll get on to, like, Death Uniteds in a second. I want to... Mm-hmm. We can talk about that now. I want to sort of probe a few questions there. But, like, you know,
no problem.
I got into streaming because I watch people like Death Uniteds and people like you. And, like, that made me go, oh, well, actually, this is accessible, and this is a thing that people can do, you know. And maybe if you just listen to the podcast, you maybe aren't familiar with the fact that I stream, yeah. or things like that. That's fine. No pressure or whatever to go and check it out. But it is a very different, like, universe, if that makes sense. So I think a good way to, like, frame this is to talk about how we met. Yeah. So it's been, like, nearly, like, 2 years now, I think, getting on to thereabouts. I was in Death Uniteds, a great streamer, friend of the show, I guess, by proxy of the fact that both I and your guest know him. and yeah, so I remember the moment really clearly. We were in a chat, and we were talking about learning different languages, and, like, if you speak multiple languages. And me being the practical joker I am, I was like, well, technically I know two languages, because I know Scouse and English. And, you know, for those that don't know, Scouse is a regional dialect of people from Liverpool in the UK. But we're famous for sort of speaking very fast like this, and with a very thick accent. And people often find that quite difficult to understand. And the typical joke is, Scousers should come with subtitles. So I said this, and then yourself, Marco, you were like, oh, Liverpool, and that's a thing I know about. And then you asked me the question, which is, are you a red or a blue? Do you support Liverpool or Everton? Both teams in the Liverpool City region. I said Liverpool, and then a friendship was born.
Yeah, that's basically it. No, it is. I should disclose, even though I'm from Portugal, which is kind of frowned upon, I'd say, in the football family circle or something, that I should choose it. I can't choose my team. I have to support the local team and all that nonsense, I'd say. For some reason, I sympathized, and my heart chose Liverpool. I was like, I really like this team. I really like what they are about. I really like the club. And then, as you know, I got lucky enough to visit the city, and I truly fell in love with it. I was like, yeah, this is not a bad place, you know. And that's basically when I remember it pretty clearly as well, because I was pretty new to Death's channel as well. Not as new as I was back then, which is kind of a weird sentence to say, but you know, when you're a Liverpool supporter in Portugal, you don't have a lot, you can't talk a lot about you know, people don't want to talk about games. They really don't. They might talk about a Champions League final or I don't know, like a big European game, they might want to talk about it, but they don't really want to talk about the team or the city. So once I saw you were Scouse, I'm like, oh yeah, this is going to be, if of course, there's like the, if he's a cool dude, it's always that. It's going to be someone that I can possibly talk to about this stuff. It's going to be really cool. That might be a start of a friendship, as it were. And so I just got lucky that I get to meet a cool dude that supports Liverpool. And that's basically it.
That's pretty much the nail on the head there. Not, you know, because that's the catalyst that started the conversations that then we had, like, outside of that chat room and just about everything else.
Exactly.
So again, like, just to, there's a lot we could go down a lot of paths, but I kind of want to just quickly sort of talk about like Death Unite Us and the channel, because on his channel you're a mod. So for those who don't know, like, you have moderators in chat who I'm going to use the term, like, babysit as a joke, but, like, you kind of monitor chat to make sure people are adhering to the rules and, you know, not being inflammatory to each other. That, would you say that's a fair description of mods? Sort of, you know?
Yeah, it is. Head on, yeah.
So what's modding for a channel like that? I think for perspective's sake, for the listener, I think the way I would frame it is that Death Unite Us is a Twitch partner. So they are, you know, they are a pivotal streamer to the platform. I would say they're very popular. Death does a very good job of having a very good community. I think, like, you know, it doesn't matter how many viewers, I'm using finger quotes because viewers are viewers. but, like, Death's, like, chat is always booming. It's always booming. A really, really good community feel. And, you know, he's a professional. He streams, like, 9 hours a day. His chat is always flowing. I don't think there's ever a stopgap because that's the community that he's built. The pitfalls with that is that if chat's busy, as a mod, you've got a lot to deal with, right? So what's modding for a channel like that like?
Well, I before that, I guess I should tell the story how I became a mod. Mm-hmm. That, as I said before, like, when I got into Twitch, specifically because of this channel, because of Death United and the 4-8 Productions. For those of you, again, that don't know him, he's basically the Final Fantasy guy. That's how the Final Fantasy guy, more connected to Final Fantasy VII, which is a huge game that I love. And I remember watching his videos on YouTube, specifically one that was the top 25 music OST from, his top 25 songs from Final Fantasy VII. I remember clearly that video. I was like, yo, this dude's cool. I'll check out his Twitch channel. I created an account, I joined Twitch, blah, 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 bing, bang, boom. It has been 4 years. And I remember, I think it was after like 1 year or something, that I got the call. I wouldn't say the call, but that's how we say it in the... no, basically, I'm very new to Twitch. I barely know how to use emotes and all that stuff. And as you said, it is a relatively big channel. He has, like, I think around 80,000 subscribers and followers. I don't know. It is, and as you said, in all streams, chat doesn't stop. It is everyone talks. It is very, very busy, and we get to talk about a lot of stuff. Also, I should disclose that it is a very family friendly, channel. There's no profanity. There's no, you know, it's very, very, it's a safe space, basically. People should be welcomed. People they're not supposed to argue unless it is politely.
Yeah, it's a very, neutral space. There's, like, very little sort of political chat or sort of socioeconomic chat. I mean, like, issues do come up, but I think you sort of said that everything is dealt with in a very non-inflammatory way. And if it gets inflammatory...
Yeah, that's where we step in. usually it is, I think, because his viewership, like myself and like you, are more mature, so we can discuss these things without going overboard. I'm not saying that everyone's an angel and there's no wrongins. There's always some.
You know,
luckily there's not a lot. Luckily there's not a lot of work, but yeah, this is all to give context to. It is it is a very big responsibility to be a mod in this channel. I've spoken about this with a couple of mates before. because you kind of want to keep the he's been streaming for around 13 years. Mm-hmm. Not streaming, he's been working on YouTube and his community for around 13 years. That's the correct description. So as you know, it is a very, very good community, one of the best, and everyone is really nice and is very friendly. So when you get brought into this world to kind of, you know, police everyone, you get scared. At least I did, because I kind of want to keep the community as friendly as it were. Everything runs smoothly. And to be honest, I got really surprised when he asked me, because I was, again, really new to Twitch. I had no idea. I was 1 year in. But he's like, yo, you know, you're always there. You're a cool dude. I kind of connect with you in some level for some reason. One of those things. We've been talking a little bit behind the scenes. I'm like, if you don't mind, if you want to, I would like you to be a mod. I'm like, okay, I have a lot to learn. But if I can contribute to this awesome thing that you've built, I would love to. That would be great. And that's how I got into it. As I don't see it as a job, I don't see it. It doesn't bother me. He doesn't have a lot of mods, as you know. I think we're around 8 or 9, mm-hmm. which for a channel his size, it is kind of small. You'd expect a little bit more.
I think that's another thing worth pointing out. You know, again, like even in my experience, like I have a few people who are mods, and it's kind of like just the as a you know, I also host like a PG sort of 15 kind of space. I always say like it's very mm-hmm. minimal case, and I like you know max of 1 F-bomb a stream. pardon me, but like I kind of went for that like a give as many people the little mod icon as they can, because that means that there's a greater chance of people being around to enforce the rules. And I think on other channels of like a similar like status, I hate kind of using these like you know hierarchical terms, but like you if you're listening, you know what I mean, like a similar size mm-hmm. stream, right? Yeah. You can have like a huge team of mods. There are you know communities with very very large number of mods.
Yeah, for the size of his community, you'd expect at least a couple more. But the ones he has, and that's the thing. That's what I understood, that he basically chooses the ones that he feels that he can trust, and he's basically a friend. That's how he treats you. You're his mate. We're mates. That's how it works. And then you kind of don't want to let it down. Like from my perspective, I'm like every time I'm there, I gotta give my best. I gotta know what to do. I asked, as you know, Zulov. I asked a lot of questions to Zulov. I was like, how do I do this? How do I do that? How do I behave now? I cannot, because it is a bit a different dynamic. Before I was just a viewer. I could just be talking about everything that I wanted and just chatting away. I shouldn't be paying attention to chat. I could just be dozing in and out. But now, now that I'm a mod, I have this extra responsibility. I gotta at least look at it and try to understand if everything's okay, and see if everyone is behaving correctly, or if I notice something that's going overboard, I should just act quickly. So maybe death. One of the things that happens the most, as you know, is the no spoiler thing.
Yeah, let's get on to that in just a second. Yeah.
Okay, I can leave it after, but. Basically, that's the 90% of our work in his stream is the no spoiler thing. General rule is just being a mod as this channel is just you just want to keep the community as good as it is, mm-hmm. or making it better and better. You kind of feel like it is weird because you kind of want him to grow more and more, but you feel kind of weird bringing new people in because you don't know if they're going to be the type of people that should be there. You don't know if they're going to behave. So you kind of don't want to bring just anyone in mm-hmm. that can just maybe create a little bit of chaos. You want to bring people that are, you know, good people, and they're respectable, and they're, you know, that's the part of mod me talking now. It's just I really thread the thin line.
I think
even sharing his channel.
it bears like again mention of like, when you know, I am what would be called a professional lurker in the Twitch world. I often just have Twitch on, or I will watch a lot of stuff. 9 times out of 10, I'm watching stuff back. That's a personal thing for me, because if I get invested in chat and I'm chatting away, I will be heavily distracted because I get really engaged. I really like talking to streamers, and that's mainly because my network is pretty small, so it's often people that I, you know of, at least, or like to chat to from other spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So that's me, and I ask you this because I honestly couldn't see myself like modding for another channel. Like, I think that would be really difficult for me because I would like. Okay, let me pose to you as a question. Does modding, do you think, take a little bit away from your experience as a viewer?
No.
Okay.
No, it's short and sweet, no, because I just feel like I can be sort of a better viewer. Okay. Because, again, I do, as you know, I watch while I'm working, so I do lurk a lot as well. But if I notice that maybe I'm the only mod there, I might just be getting a closer eye on chat and mm-hmm. keeping it. Even though I'm working on one screen, I have another eye. Just keep checking it like every 10 seconds or something to see what pops up. See if I see by his tone of voice if everything's going smoothly. See if I hear anything like, yo, maybe you shouldn't say that. And maybe that's where I just put a little bit more attention into chat. But as long as talks go, I did say that it is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. The first impact is you don't want to, how do I say it? You don't want to like overexpose or over talk. You don't want people to feel like, oh, only the mods are talking, or oh, he only reads the mods comments. You kind of want to just keep a conversation going. So if I have anything to say, I'd say it. I'll just behave the same as I did as a viewer. I just talk to everyone that is in chat. Say hi to everyone, just keep it light. And I do crack jokes. You know that him and myself go back and forth quite a bit because I know, I understand that he likes that type of content sometimes. It is interesting for people that are viewing that he can crack a joke at me and I won't be offended. I take it in stride and I just crack one right back. And it's good banter, it's nothing. Just good, two good mates having some fun. So that part of the stream is not lost just because I'm a mod. It's just, it adds that extra layer of, if I see someone that shouldn't be there, I can actually get rid of him. I can work on it, or I can just talk. A lot of times, I gotta be honest, a lot of times that someone steps over the line, you just time him out and just send him a message like, yo, you know, you shouldn't say stuff like that. You should behave. And if you want to get back to it, we'll let you. You're not banned for now, but you need to, you know the rules. You can read the rules again. Just, sort it out and get back in. No one's going to judge you again. Just don't be a dick and you'll be fine. And most people do. Most people are like, okay, fair enough. Or I didn't read the whole rules, or I didn't see that rule, or sorry, I stepped over the line. I'll talk to death or send them a message apologizing or anything. You know, which is cool. It shows people kind of, if you talk to them and kind of give them another chance, it's fair enough that they just go, yeah, okay, fair. Just let's try this again. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, that those people mess up again, but...
The rules are really important, actually, because, pardon me, very nasally. You joke there, like, oh, you know, the rules are as simple as don't be a dick. But I would actually say death has, like, really... really very good rules. They're very prescriptive, they're very detailed, like mm-hmm. but they are quite concise, but they're very clear. I think one of the issues you can have is, and Dr. B from Take This, Dr. Raphael Boccanozo, goes for Dr. B because strange Italian name reasons, as he puts it, mm-hmm. like he says, like the worst thing you can do is just have don't be a dick, because that is so subjective.
Yes, that's right? Subjective, yeah. I see.
And I think like death does a really good job of having very clear rules, so it kind of baffles me that anyone would very obviously like overstep those anyway. Maybe that's because yeah. I'm a person that reads rules. Mm-hmm. That brings us on to the big one though, and you mentioned it before, spoilers. What on earth is managing spoilers like? Because I mean, I've watched arguably I think two of the biggest moments on Death Stream in terms of spoilers. The first one being the Final Fantasy VII Remake. I had finished it. I stayed up, like, I think it was, like, 1 a.m. my time, like, watching him finish it, because I wanted to get his opinion. Mm-hmm. Final Fantasy VI, watching him play that for the first time. Again, like, both games I had finished ahead of him. And I didn't spoil anything. I just sat and watched. What is, like, managing spoilers like? Because we all know people on the internet like to come in and just spoil things for the sake of it.
Another thing, it's not just spoilers. Death has also a very big rule that I forgot, which is no backseating.
No backseating. could you explain what that is for listeners?
Yeah, backseating is basically when you're playing a game that you never played before, or you're just playing a game, and someone comes into your chat and just says, yo, you have to do this, or you should do it this way. Basically, you're guiding the person that's playing to play it the way you want to play it, which isn't... Some people like it that way. Some people like the backseating. Some people enjoy being told what to do. That's not Death's case. He likes to explore. He likes to figure it out by himself. Maybe there's a puzzle. Everyone knows the answer to.
What's your view on backseating?
Yeah, I'm pro no backseating.
I'm mostly the same. I'm very situational. Like I know, like if I played stuff like if I had a view that's like a 100% of the game I'm playing. And I'm like, look, I've got no idea. Does someone want to tell me?
Which is fair because it does happen in Death's channel as well. Especially, I think it happened in Final Fantasy VI as well. We really want to experience something for the first time, which is fair. But we also got to remember that we're trying to entertain people. And if we're stuck in the same part for like, I don't know, an hour and a half or 2 hours, you feel like time is dragging out. You feel like this isn't, I'm not having fun, I'm just getting frustrated, and everyone who's going to watch this is not going to be enjoyable, so I might as well just ask for maybe a hint or something so I can get out of it. That's what I learned from Death as well. He does that from time to time. He does, like, ask for hints, not full-on spoilers or full-on backseating, just, hey, go to that place. No, maybe just make a little bit of a riddle, you know, just... That's how I deal with as you said, it is situational, and for me it is the same. I don't like backseating just for the sake of it. Mm-hmm. If I'm stuck and it has been a very long time and I feel it's being prejudicial, then I ask for help. But I don't want to be told. I just want to be like guided with very, very not in an explicit way, just in a fun way.
Yeah.
Again, to keep it entertaining. And but you gotta remember that, as I said before at the start of this, Death is basically the Final Fantasy VII guy. He's mm-hmm. the Final Fantasy guy. So we were all scared of the Final Fantasy VII remake playthrough. we were excited and scared at the same time because I didn't play the game before Death. I knew I was gonna get spoiled because I was gonna watch one of my friends play it live for the first time. But I thought, hey, this is going to be a great experience. All my mates are here. We're going to enjoy the game for the first time. Every one of us. It's going to be great, right? That's what I thought. I even took the week off. Like, I took the week off. Like, that's going to play the whole week. I'm going to take the week off. I'm just going to enjoy the streams. It's going to be part of the experience. That's what I want to do. And, yeah, as you said, we had one incident, which... I know he doesn't like talk numbers, but in these streams, we had a lot more people than you usually do, which is normal because it was a new game. Mm-hmm. It was just released. He is the Final Fantasy VII guy.
Yep.
So we expected more people. We're talking about 300 to 500 people in chat. A lot of people that don't read rules.
That's people in chat. That is people sending messages every second. Ping, ping, ping. Like, it was like a rolling script. Like,
and you have people that don't read rules, that don't care about the rules, that there's no way of communicating to them. That, like, yo, you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that. Like, we had to basically have a more drastic approach to things. Honestly, I was pretty proud of the speed of the run because of the Final Fantasy VII. Remake run, because we only had one incident, which is insane for the amount of people that were watching. Most of the time we had like 2-3 mods in. The end of the day you might have 4 or 5, but to 5 people to guard everyone that was there, it is insane. And it was that week felt like a little bit of work, not gonna lie.
I mean, just again though, like listeners benefit, like imagine, you know, like being one person and then you're put in like a conference room with 100 people and be like, right, make sure none of these do anything naughty.
Yeah, that's basically it. Imagine you're a professor in school with 30 or, you know, those 30 or 40 kids in a room. You know that at least five of them are just going to muck about and you need to keep them in line. Now imagine the same room, but times that by 10 or 12 or 20 or maybe 50. And then the bad kids are going to be a lot more. And then the good kids are going to try to protect the bad kids or to protect the mods because they think they're going to help. And sometimes it doesn't go to plan because everyone gets mad. It is insane. So it was a tough week. We just had we just had one incident with one guy that just clearly came about to spoil the whole thing. We did time him out. We time him out like twice. Which, if you don't know, timeout is just we delete everything you wrote in chat. No one can see it. Which is important to Death because, as you know, he uploads his content to YouTube as well. So if we delete it pretty quickly, it doesn't show up on screen, which is awesome. Because even if it's a spoiler, we can delete it and at least the YouTube video won't have it. But as you know, if someone says a spoiler, everyone else reads it and then everyone else is going to start talking about it. Like, yo, is that true? Does he really die? Does this happen? And then you have to time out all those people to avoid the conversation getting out of hand. And if you have two people there or three, it is insane work. But we had this guy that clearly spoiled once or twice. We increased his timeout time. And on a side window, I was talking to a couple of the mods and I said, hey, you know, we thought maybe we should ban him. Maybe that would be the right thing to do, but we wasn't sure. We usually talk when we ban is just such an extreme thing for the 4A community that we talk to Death about it to make sure. The guy just he ended up getting banned for nonstop spoilers, which we deleted. But unfortunately, he did create another account and made a donation with a spoiler. That one we couldn't stop.
I think that like again, just for like listeners' benefit. So like your chat is its own like homogenous thing, and as a streamer, it like exists like maybe on your video or to the side of it. And as you're describing here, it can be policed. What you've just described though cannot be, because if you donate, if you donate money, like, and that's usually done by an external client, and then that appears in chat. You can put in like a little message, maybe just like I love your work or whatever. Exactly. This person decided to put a spoiler in there, and then that appears as a big thing on the screen in front of everyone for everyone to see. And most streamers also read their donation alerts out and the message almost like on instinct. So
yeah, that's basically what happened. This guy put the spoiler on. Death quickly understood what it was. He was spoiled. It was a big spoiler, unfortunately. But it didn't ruin the experience, to be honest. It was just a blip. It's just, you know, we expected a lot worse, to be honest. There's a lot of people. We expected something a lot worse to happen. Even we talked to Death about it. We apologized. But he was like, yo, dude, no worries. Just it is something that's bound to happen with an event of this magnitude. I don't want to make it sound like a really big thing, but it is kind of big for the Final Fantasy VII community. Mm-hmm. But I won't forget it. And I won't forget the dude. If by sheer luck I would find him on the street, I would have a very good talking to. It would be a great event for my life. But it do feel sad about it. Because it was, you know, it is very special. It was a very special week. It was a very special moment. I ended up getting a, if you remember, I ended up getting a cameo for Death from, for people who don't know, from Barrett's voice actor, which is a character in the game. I did find him on Cameo. I got a couple messages. The guy was incredibly great. He did it one day's notice, a couple hours. He shoot the messages like, yo, this is great. Thank you very much. I'll send it over. And that's how we started because after the first playthrough, we did the complete playthrough. And I was like, yeah, maybe I should do something special to, you know, clear our minds of what happened. And just, I mean, not that everyone remembered. Like, a lot of people already knew because they have played the game. They just wanted his opinion and his reaction. That's another thing that I didn't mention as a Twitch mod that you get, but it happens to you a lot if you're a Twitch mod, is that in our case, for spoilers, like for me, I never play the game. I never even watched the trailer. I'm a person that likes to go in the games blind. Mm-hmm. So I knew nothing about Final Fantasy Remake. I was so ready. I'm like, yo, this is going to be great. I have no expectations. That's how I like to be. I want to be surprised, wined and dined and the whole nine yards. And then you just get spoiled by Twitch chat in a couple of hours.
So how like, again, this is like a really daft question, but like, how did you know it was spoiler or not if you didn't know what was in the game?
That's the big thing. You've seen these discussions that people, once they sense the no spoiler thing, they kind of do spoilers as a joke, but we don't know. So we take them as spoilers and we just time you out. And then it generates a discussion like, yo, that wasn't a spoiler, that was a joke. Like, I don't know. I didn't play the game. I don't know. I have to assume it is real and I have to delete it. So maybe don't joke about that, or make it clear and obvious that's a joke.
There's like the rule, isn't there? Like, if it hasn't happened on screen and we're not playing that game,
don't talk about it. Yeah. That's basically is rule. That happened a lot more in Final Fantasy VI. I played Final Fantasy VI before death, so I was prepared to.
So I was going to ask, like, how did that compare as an experience modding for a game that you had like quite recently played?
Mm-hmm. It's much easier. It is much, much easier. Like, when it is a game that you don't know and that you get spoilers left and right, you kind of feel a little bit angry, you feel bad, because, at least for me, it is a big deal for me, because I really love the game, I really love the series, and I wanted to go into it blindly. I just wanted to experience it with my mates and with Death and all of his mates. And I couldn't, because some people in chat don't know how to read rules, or they just get silly and just blurt out things that I need to delete. So that kind of ruined a little bit, but you get past it because you get focused on what's on screen. You hear them talking about the game, you get right back into it. When you know the game, which is, again, was a big thing in Final Fantasy VI, I specifically played the game before death because I knew it was going to be a big, again, Final Fantasy VI is a big game. He hasn't played it. We knew we totally expected a lot of more backseating than spoilers, to be honest.
And sorry, just a quick sidebar. Like, I almost don't understand how the backseating. I mean, I beat six as well, but like, there is the beauty of it is there's so much variability. Like, it's so difficult to backseat. Like, you can have a huge roster of party members to choose from. Like, and then, you know, I suppose there probably is a min-max, like, best party. But, like, the whole fun is being able to choose whatever you want, right?
You know, you understand that because you're a sensible person. No, it is, honestly, I'm not ragging on anyone here, but here's a big, I don't know if it's a misconception or if it is, I don't know what it is, but people think there's only one way to kill a rabbit, which is a saying here in Portugal. Mm-hmm. But there are many ways to do it, you know. And not that I condone or that I support killing rabbits.
I think
not the case.
Like a Western metaphor, a Western equivalent is there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Yeah, that's like basically it.
Animals shouldn't be harmed. Like, let's just put that out there.
Let's just say that's more than one way to do things.
Yes.
And the beauty of Twitch is, you know, I'll give an example. Metal Gear Solid, as you know, it is my favorite game of all time. And you don't have to. I play it one way. If you go play it, there's going to be some differences because you never play it. You never played it. It's your first experience. You don't know what the game is about. I've played it 1,000 times or more. But I want to see what you see first time. Like, I want to see how you deal with things. I want to see what weapons you choose to use or what strategies you choose to use. That's the fun for me, seeing people learn and adapt and how they go about the challenges, how they figure out the puzzles. That's the interesting part of Twitch. But people think it is all about just finishing the game and getting the review. People just think, yo, just get it over with, just play the game and then say your piece. No, it is the ride that makes it interesting. Where if you finish a game, if you finish a 20-hour game in 20 hours because everyone has been telling you how to play it, how interesting do you think the review is going to be? It's going to be like, yeah, I did what everyone told me to. I didn't enjoy the story because everyone told me to skip the cutscenes. I don't know what happens. Great. The graphics look cool.
It's like, again, maybe if you're someone that doesn't play games, it's like going to the cinema with someone and them speaking over the whole film. Yeah. You've physically been able to watch it, but they've just been in your ear going, and this, and this. So that.
Oh, and you know what happens next? That then this happens.
Yeah.
This guy's gonna die.
So yeah, you can imagine how irritating that is.
It is, and it removes all the fun and the interesting aspect of it. And it honestly does. It is the pure and cool thing about seeing other people play games is how they play it for the first time and how they experience it. Because I have played Final Fantasy VII a lot of times, but same. I learned so much from other people playing it and reading things or seeing things in the story that I haven't seen. And it's the discussion about, because you know the game, how the game ends or how the game progresses, it isn't linear. It is open to, a lot of things are open to interpretation.
Well, a good example of this, like I remember I was playing through Final Fantasy VII. And I remember you yourself were in chat and we were actually talking about memory. We were talking about one of the flashback scenes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, spoilers for Final Fantasy VII at this point. Come on, there's been an entire remake. Come on.
It's been 30 years. It's okay.
But we were talking about like Tifa's memory and maybe why she doesn't confront Cloud earlier on. And I was, you know, because I've done a bit of psychology, I was like, well, actually, you know, Tifa's memories are probably really quite scrambled by the trauma. She also suffers a big mm-hmm. physical injury at the time, and she physically sees Cloud at that event. So in my mind, I was like, it would make complete sense for her not to know if Zack or Cloud was there. That mm-hmm. would, like, from a trauma sort of memory perspective, that would make complete sense that my brain would not be sure. So she didn't want to upset essentially Cloud's mental health by bringing it up with that doubt when he seemed mm-hmm. so sure on it.
Yeah.
And that's my take on it.
But see, that's the fun part of the thing. Like, if you just spoil or if you just, I don't know, obtuse about it and you just say, yeah, that's this means this because that Tifa doesn't see him because she's lying. She's just trying to protect Cloud. She doesn't want him to know the truth, whatever. If you don't discuss, then the things don't have, it's not fun. And if you spoil the whole thing, you kind of, you know, you kind of, I don't know what to say, you kind of guide the thought process in the way that you want to. Like, you don't allow
people... It's very, very manipulative, isn't it?
Exactly. You kind of manipulate people's perspectives to see the things the way you're seeing it. That's not what I want to see. I want to see stuff like you do. Like, you know, maybe it was because of trauma that she doesn't remember stuff. That's a valid theory. That's a valid way of thinking. I think that adds an extra layer to it. That's awesome. We're talking about a game that has been released, I don't know, 20 plus years, and no one knows everything for sure.
There are no certainties.
Exactly. If you don't discuss these things, if you keep manipulating everyone's thoughts, then we would be talking about it. That's basically it.
Yeah.
But yeah. This all goes back to modding his channel. And with Final Fantasy VI, it was more of a backseating kind of thing, which goes back to this, the manipulating way of trying to play, which I think, to be honest, it was a lot, the Final Fantasy VI playthrough was a lot sadder of an experience than it was the Final Fantasy VII remake, because even though I was prepared, you know, you get people that get in that stream. You know what I'm talking about. You mm-hmm. get people that are there almost every day. They know the rules, and they just, for this one playthrough or for the playthroughs that they see, they kind of forget or they kind of just want to do their thing. They kind of want a backseat, and we have to time them out and talk to them. And it's like, oh, it's fine. I know what I'm doing. And it is annoying because you just want people to, you know, enjoy. We know what we're doing. We know why we're timing you out. It's just, and then it begins a whole new discussion of why are you timing me out? Why is this? This is not a backseating. This is just a joke. we had a big discussion because someone posted a Final Fantasy VI spoilers. I think it's fine by now. Someone posted an octopus emote, which, you know, it's Ultras, the boss, and the guy. A couple of people started spamming it, and me. I clearly remember me and Zulu love timing out every emote. And it was like, why are you timing me out? Because that's a spoiler. We know Ultras is going to show up. You're trying to spoil or backseat in a clever way, trying to have fun with it, but it's still a spoiler.
Yeah, I mean, like, for context, like, this was at a point where, you know, the player has no, like, yeah, it's not really a spoiler, like, in this format, because, like, it lacks context. But, like, the idea that they were trying to circumvent the rules was a bit
naughty. Exactly. Because Ultras is this one recurrent, I mean, meme boss that hasn't showed, it hadn't show up until then. But everyone knows where it's going to show up. So instead of they're saying, yo, we're going to have a boss fight now, everyone's just started spamming the emote, thinking they're slick, and we have to time them out. And then that sparked the big discussion, I remember. And that's the other thing that we kind of get a little bit fussed about is when Death has to basically stop the stream and say, hey, don't argue with the mods. They know what they're doing. Just if they say it's a spoiler, it is a spoiler. And then he actually got to explain why it was a spoiler. It's like, so you put an emote of an octopus and then an octopus is going to show up on screen and you don't think that's a spoiler? Okay, I don't know what to tell you then. Which, luckily for us, Death is really protective of these mods, but it kind of ruins the show a little bit. It might ruin the momentum of the stream. We don't want that. We would just rather people... And again, for people that aren't familiar with Twitch, timing out is not a big deal at all. You just get all your messages get erased. We time out for 1 second. You can't type messages for 1 second. And in other channels, you just get plainly banned and you can't watch the stream. So 4.8 is very linear when it comes to it. It's okay. You made a mistake. We'll just delete it. We just don't want it out there. We just don't want to ruin the experience. Feel free to come back and write more interesting stuff. So I don't know why people sometimes get a lot of angry about getting timed out. I don't know why that's such a big deal, but that's for up for them to reply, not me, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so I honestly, you know, these kind of chats, the whole kind of thing about Psyched With You is meant to be about you. So I apologize, but I genuinely was curious about what it's to like to mod in that type of community.
Oh, but it ends up being about me because it is something I do every day
We touched on a lot of interesting topics. So I usually kind of talk to people about, like, you know, what are they playing lately or, you know, things like that. But let's get into a little bit of meat here, right? Let's talk about Metal Gear Solid.
Okay. Metal Gear Solid.
Obviously, you know, I know you. We've spoken off camera a lot about, like, the importance of games and things like that. But just if you wouldn't mind telling the listeners about how important that game is to you. Just, I mean, you know, your username Solid Snake with fives instead of S's is the lead character from the Metal Gear Solid franchise.
Yeah, exactly. It is we've spoken about it, and it is an interesting journey in my video game history. I distinctively remember being a little kid, and I have been playing games. Remember, I had the PS1 for, I think it was 1 or 2 years that I had it, and my dad gave me Micro Machines V3, which is a fun game. And it is what you expect from a game at that time. I did say I'm 30 now. I was, I don't know, maybe 8, 10 back then. And games were just, for me, it was just, I don't know, just Super Mario was a game. Micro Machines was a game. FIFA was a game. It's just these things that you do. Like, it's not like a movie. You see where I'm going with this. and then, it's a funny story, actually. I remember, I'm not rich. I wasn't rich at the time. I'm not rich now. So, exactly. So I couldn't buy any game that I wanted. I didn't have a pirated PS1, but my cousin had this cousin that had a lot of games. And he's like, yo, we should go there and ask him for some games that you can play, like so you don't have to play Micro Machines all the time.
Back in the days when you could lend games off people.
Exactly. Back in the good old days that you could just knock on a mate's door and say, hey, can I borrow that game for like a week or something? But that's what we did. I was on vacation at his place, and it was like, I was very nicely, went to him, was like, yo, can you lend me a game? He's like, yeah. And he didn't like me very much. I know that now. So he's like, yeah, you can have this one. But I heard him talking to my cousin saying, yo, that game's a piece of it's not that great. it sucks. It's terrible. I can't get past the first bit. He's not going to have fun. So he can take that one. He can even keep it if he wants. And my cousin was like, yo, don't listen to him. The guy's an idiot. You're going to love it. Just give it a shot. And I'm like, I remember getting home, opening the box, and putting the game in, seeing all the... Keep in mind that I'm Portuguese, so, and I'm around 10, so I don't know English. I know press start, save, load, new game, the whole stuff, the whole basic stuff.
Game terminology. Yeah. Universal language.
Exactly. Game terminology, that's it. So I put in this game, and I start seeing what we call cutscenes. I start seeing a movie playing in front of me, like this 007 type sort of deal guy that gets in a one-person submarine, and there's an old guy talking about some bunch of stuff that I cannot understand. And I see the guy swimming. He's like, yo, this looks dope. And also, it helps that I'm a pretty solitaire kid, you know. I think we all were at some point in life, mm-hmm. So... I did have friends, it's not like that. I did have my mates, I did play football, but, you know, I did feel pretty lonely at times. So this is one guy that just goes on an adventure, goes on a mission. And even though I couldn't understand the language, I could basically get a grip of the surroundings and what I was supposed to do. For those of you that aren't familiar with the game, the first part of the game, you have to wait on a tank hangar. Or no, you have to wait on a little area until an elevator comes down, and then you have to go up, which is fairly easy if you understand English, because the the campbell or your sergeant tells you, yo, you just gotta wait for the elevator. When it comes down, you ride it and go up. If you're a kid that doesn't understand English, you just kill the guards a bunch of times, you get caught,
I would like to point out here that I was a kid that understood English and still had no idea what I was doing at that part of the game, because I could hear it, but I had no patience. I was like, I want to run around and swim and punch people in the face.
That's basically what we all did. I realize that now. But at the time, I was like, I don't understand what's going on. So basically, when I rode the elevator and I see these... I clearly remember the cutscene of all the snow. You see the helicopter. You start getting introduced to more members. There's Mei Ling. There's this girl that lets you save the game. There's another girl that talks about DNA and a bunch of stuff. Of course I understood DNA because it's three simple letters, so yep. I was like, yeah, this is kind of cool. And then you get to see the bad guy, and you know, all this, you started to feel like, well, this is something special. That's what I honestly thought that at the time. This is something special, this is something different. This is not like every other game that I played. I feel this is something different. So I kind of really tried hard to figure out the game. And I got more and more into it. And as time went by, the years went by, it helped me a lot understand English, to be honest. I picked up the English language pretty soon, around 9 or 10, around 11, 12. I don't know the age for sure, but I was pretty young. I started to understand English. I started to understand the voice acting, which was insane. Keep in mind that the graphics at the time weren't that great. So that for me was like, whoa, this looks... this looks real. This looks movie quality, which if you see it now, it's in my opinion still holds up.
I was gonna say it's. I mean, like, okay, does it directly compare? No. Has it aged well in terms of the whole style of the game? Yeah, I think so.
I think that's the key part there. It's just it fits the style of the game. It fits what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically it. But once I got to understand the story, I was like, yo, this guy, this Solid Snake guy, he was just a lonely guy that has to destroy a bunch of stuff. And he's no hero. He knows he has his flaws. He knows he's a very complicated character. And I got really into it. I got seriously into this character that was very complex, very... I don't know, he was capable of doing very dark things, but for the right reason at some point. But you kind of know there's like a very dark side to him because he really enjoys what he does anyway.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, he's a mercenary, but he kind of enjoys it, which is conflicting. Like, should I like this guy? He kills people. Why should I like him? It's that sort of deal. So that's what made me love the character and the game so much, because for me, video games were just about, I don't know, a distraction. Just maybe seeing some balls and some cars run fast. And then you get this this movie-type deal that you get to be the first person playing it and experience the story. And when you understand the story, you kind of, I want more of this. I want to know more about this. I want to see what happens next. I want to see everything that is to know about the Metal Gear saga and all its lore. Sorry, that was basically it. I got really pulled into it. And
did you encounter a point where, like, maybe because of the language barrier, that like you were unable to continue or didn't know what you were doing?
A lot of times.
Oh, that's fair.
And when I was a kid, a lot of times I remember, if you, again, it's another game that we can spoil because it's been a lot of years. The story was, again, nothing to me because I didn't understand it as a little kid.
Yeah.
But it just flew out over my head. I just picked it up later on. Even though I did pick up that it was something special and different when I was a kid, I was like, I need to replay this when I can understand it. Kind of helped me focus in school. You should thank Kojima for that. I distinctly remember the part where you're supposed to find Revolver Ocelot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember, you have to put C4s in a certain wall that makes a different noise or it looks different.
Yes.
The only way to figure it out is if you know how to knock on the walls, which is explained, again, via codec, which is how most of the things are explained. Again, if you don't understand English, it is a challenge.
Yeah.
So I didn't know. I remember getting stuck on that part for at least 3 months. I was just running around killing people and trying to figure. But I didn't want to give it up. Maybe because I was mad at my cousin's cousin. I was like, he thinks I'm an idiot. I'll figure it out. I have this game
fueled
to play.
By
I'll
spite.
Figure it out. I'll finish it. Maybe out of spite. I don't know. I remember calling, I had older mates, like they were in 8th grade or something at the time. Maybe not 8th, but 7 or 6, I don't know. They know English, basically. They know English. I was like, yo, you gotta help me figure this out. And they wouldn't figure it out. They didn't know what to do, and I was lost. So I just tried and tried. I started doing stupid things, and then I distinctively remember figuring out the noise thing. It's like, this wall sounds different. And then I threw grenades at it, as you do. That wasn't the thing. That was the C4. I eventually figured it out. I was like, that's it. I got it. That's it. And then a whole new world presented myself. I got to fight the first boss, first real boss. I got to meet this Russian guy that had a revolver, and these shots did some trick shots crazy in the walls. I was like, yo, this is the coolest thing ever. And then you get to a mind reader boss that you have to change the controller ports. But before that, if you don't know, I'm basically spoiling the whole game, but it's fine. Before that, you have to pick up the CD case to to get the codec, which fortunately for me was easy because I remember skipping the text and just reading CD case, and I was like, oh. But if you remember, when you win against Revolver Ocelot, you have an item that's called CD. Mm-hmm. I remember messing about and the CD did nothing. And then I was out of, I don't know, desperation. I don't remember clearly what I've done, but I was like, CD case, maybe they mean the real CD case. I remember seeing Meryl's face and her codec. I was like, oh, let's put that in. Let's see if that's the, you know, I was a smart kid.
Clever, huh?
I kind of figured it out. I'm like, yeah, this is great. This is the that was another. Sorry, just give me.
No worries.
Sorry about that.
All right. I will say, like, again, my experience, like, I remember that, like, look on the back of the CD case and you'll get Meryl's frequency. And I was like, what? And I like, you know, we were not like a very affluent family either. So I had a chipped PS1. So all my games were not genuine articles. So I picked up the little CD sheath and be like, there's nothing on the back of this. What am I supposed to do? This has got nothing. This is useless to me.
I got the same vibe from one of my mates because if you recall, in those days it was okay to go to Blockbuster and you can lend games from Blockbuster, but you don't get the case.
Yeah.
So the same thing happened. Like, you should check the back of the CD case. Well, I don't have a CD case. I distinctly remember that discussion. And that's another thing why I felt that the game was so special, because it was the first time that something that was in my hand, something physical, had an impact on something that was happening on the screen. I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. It's not the controller, it's something completely different. How does it know? Like, my little tiny brain doesn't comprehend how this can be done. And then you get, again, there was the Mantis fight, which I got stuck for a really long time. But I did figure it out eventually, because Campbell does tell you about the controller port. And I just read controller and I thought, I don't know, I started trying different things. I tried different controllers. I tried putting in a multi-tap, and I remember I had one of those sketchy multi-taps that you can connect to four controllers that you'd buy in like the Chinatown market for like five quid, and you just I remember plugging those in and saying, let's see if it works, and it didn't. I don't remember quite how I figured it out, but I eventually did. And that's the thing that I resemble and I remember the game so much. It's just I felt like I evolved a lot during that game. Like, it helped me through, I don't know, it's just combat loneliness at the time, and it was something special, and I had to use my brain. I had to be engaged. I got to know this really cool looking character, and then years later figure out there was this really awesome, intricate and complex character that I never thought it could be. That's what led me to be Solid Snake, I guess.
No, and that's a great story. I mean, obviously, like, I know I've heard that before, but it's really nice, and I think everyone has like a game like that, like, you know, your first game that like really clicks into gear in like your own mind and just makes sense. And for those that like haven't played it or don't even care, like, but Metal Gear Solid is a very special game. And like, it's, I think, you know, again, like yourself, like, I played it as a kid and was like, this is fun, and I just enjoyed the very like top layer experience. And then when you go back and replay it, like, the story is amazing, and throughout like the entire sort of saga of games, granted I haven't finished the fifth one, but like,
you know,
it's on my list. But like, you know, the anti-war messaging and some of the really like nuanced, like, there's a big anti-eugenics argument throughout the entire game. You know, that's really big for our underdeveloped brains to try and take in at that time. Like,
yeah, it's a game about walking nuclear tanks. You know, you're basically talking about the destruction of civilization at certain point. So that those things do go over your head, but once you can understand it, it is a totally different world. And that's why I fell in love with it so much, because, again, at first look at it, it's basically a case of don't judge a book by its cover, because you see what the game is about. You see all the weapons, all the killing. But the game actually actually tries to force you, not force you, but tries to incentivize you to not kill or to... the message is clearly anti-war. It's insane. If you just see it from the top layer, it just looks like a killing machine game. And when you get into it, you kind of you can get really a lot more out of it. And it's the greatest gift. I never thought games could do that to a person. That's the main thing. I never thought game could have like this deep of a message. I just thought games were games, and that's it. And that's when I started the brain started to develop, I'd say.
I mean, we have spoken for hours and hours and hours, like, previously, and I am very respectful of your time joining me to record this. Oh, so I'm going to sort of, like, move on to sort of my last sort of couple of, like, standard questions. Then I've got a couple of quick-fire ones, and then maybe we can get into some other stuff if you've still got some time.
No, I got loads of time, don't worry.
So the next one is kind of, if you had no limitations, so you had a limitless... resources in terms of like people power and finances, what sort of project would you like to do? Like, obviously I've interviewed a lot of academics, so I always kind of frame this in the what research would you do, and I always say, you know, if you've listened to more than one of these episodes, Celeste, longitudinal study, get people record their experience with that. But what would yours be? I've asked I remember one of the other guests, Rachel Button, she's a small business owner, so I was like, what would you do if you had limitless resources? And, you know, her answer was like, I'd go big, I'd have multiple sugar and dices. Which are,
it is a really nice question, but to me it's always between two worlds.
Yeah.
I think the first main thing would be I would love to have a gaming developer company, because I think the gaming development industry is in a very dark place that people don't know about. A lot of shady things happen behind the scenes, and we just see the top layer once again.
All of this has sort of come out in the wash a little bit, like lately.
Yeah, lately we've seen a bit more of we're looking under the carpet a little bit.
Yeah,
and I would love to have a decent indie company, which is the projects like Celeste are born and Hollow Knight, and they're labors of love, as we discussed, and. They go by it, most of the time they go by it in the best way, like Team Cherry did, like Matt plays games or makes games did. And that's what I wanted to do. I would love to have the resources to do a game of my own. I think that's a silly dream when you're a kid, right? You think, oh, I can make a game. I can make a game.
I mean,
the coolest game ever.
You're saying that to someone who, like, wanted to study games as a child, and I'm lucky enough to be able to do that now. So
yeah, see, I still study about it. I still study game development, even though I don't think I'll ever work on game development, to be honest. But I still study about it. I still like to see how things work. I've worked in mods for games, as you know.
I mean, you don't have to spoil anything that might get patented. But what type of game would you like to make?
I think it's a very easy question to answer.
Just a stealth game.
Yeah, I did back in the day. I had this little. I still have it around somewhere. I had this little journal where I started writing writing just cool phrases that I catch from movies or songs, and I just thought maybe if I start writing this stuff, I can start. You know, things start intertwining, and maybe I could create some characters. Maybe I should. I can see something working. I have this, I can spoil it, no problem, but I have this very distinct image in my brain of like a really dark forest, and then you see two silhouettes in the dark. Mm-hmm. That would be like my main, like the title screen or something. I always had that image in my brain. I asked the mate who does tattoos for a living to kind of draw it in a piece of paper. It's like, yeah, put it down. Let me see how it looks. Let me see. It's one of those projects that's always in the back of your mind. I started building it, I don't know, 15 years ago. I don't know. I just started writing stuff, and maybe someday it's going to be something. Maybe it wasn't. So I would definitely go after that. I would definitely have gather around a couple of mates and invest money. And just, I don't know if it's going to be good. I don't. I had no idea. I was just You know, it's not about, to me, it's not about just being good or being bad or whatever. It's just doing it. I would love to just do it. Just put it out there. Just see how it is. And at least I can say, yeah, I made my game.
Cool.
But for now, it's nothing. It's nothing written in stone. I don't have nothing. How do you say nothing like finished or anything? Yeah. It's just ideas. Just
to probe a little bit more, like you mentioned the Horizon Zero Dawn stealth game. Mm-hmm. Have you played many other good stealth games like recently? Because it's not the most popular genre. You don't see a lot.
I was gonna say it is a rare bunch. It is a rare bunch, and basically. One thing that the stealth genre suffers from is the, you just hide behind the pillar. For example, Assassin's Creed can be considered a stealth game, but I played it, and I think it's more about the killing than it is about the stealth, and that's why I didn't like it that much. I played the first game, I wasn't that interested.
Because I feel like stealth games tend to either, stealth games in my mind, you're either a spy, sort of Splinter Cell, Metal Gear Solid,
exactly.
Or you're a ninja like Tenchu, or I played Aragami. That was actually a pretty good stealth game. I played that
a few years old. Check it out. I remember you mentioning it.
But it's like slim pickings though, right? Like the genre is there.
It is, but it also depends on what you perceive as stealth, because Metal Gear, it is the stealth game, I'd say, but it is a little bit silly with it. You know, with the whole cardboard box thing. You know, you have throwing stuff at the enemies. You know, it does go silly, but I like games that don't take themselves too seriously. That's one of the main things as well about Metal Gear, is just the fun aspect. It also counts to me. Horizon Zero Dawn is a little bit different. I do like the stealth action, but I would like to see more of it, more variety of it. I'm used to it. I can recommend games like, for example, Mark of the Ninja is a great stealth game. It is an indie game, so don't expect anything like too, revolutionary or anything. It's basically the story, again, story of a ninja. That's the game mechanics, though. The gameplay is really well done, and I had fun with it. It is a really cool stealth game, one that I would recommend. A lot. I'm thinking of others. I don't know. Again, Horizon. I think it needs more variety. I'd say Assassin's Creed. It's not really my thing. If you like action more than stealth, you could play Assassins. I would recommend what was the name? The one that's in London that you have superpowers as well. That's the other thing, the superpowers. Dishonored. Dishonored is a cool stealth game as well. It is a very different approach, again, with the superpowers and all. But it is a really cool stealth experience. So I think those three or four games have a very... Even though they are rare and hard to come by, they have like the very different styles of stealth, in a way. Mm-hmm. Like you can navigate through them and find your type of stealth, if stealth is your thing. Again, Siphon Filter is more like the more action-based, like Assassin's Creed. And then you have, for example, Dark. It's another stealth game that's more like Dishonored, special powers and the whole shtick. And then you have Metal Gear that's in a place of his own.
Yeah.
It is a mix between the silly and the stealthy and the superpower and all that stuff.
I do want to quickly throw in just a fun Dishonored fact. I actually played that for the first time a few years back now. Mm-hmm. It kind of just farted out my mind. But I did not realize that you weren't supposed to just, like, kill everything in sight. Because I was like, I'm doing it stealthily, so it's fine. And, like, you know, sort of spoilers, but, like, decisions affect the end of the game. So
exactly.
I spent the entire rest of the game, like, not even coughing on anything. And, like, literally, like, the penultimate level, like, managed to get my notoriety down. To get, like, the not awful ending.
Exactly.
And it's like, try really hard. Like, I accidentally took a guy out. Great restart level.
that's the cool part about Dishonored as well. It is an interesting way of approaching stealth. That's why I single it out. Because it is different. you have all these superpowers. The story is bonkers. And your decisions affect how the game turns out. So it's a cool experience. Maybe that's more your thing. When I say your thing, I say your viewers.
Yeah.
So I'd say just try these three or four. And I think it's a good basis to start looking for new stealth games. For example, Batman has some cool stealth as well. Mm-hmm. Hitman is a classic Assassin's movie sort of deal game. So there's a lot of stealth out there. The good one is going to be defined by you and what type of stealth you like. So I'd say these are the benchmarkings. Mm-hmm. Give those a try and then you'll see.
You did mention that there was like another vein of if you had limitless resources, what were you going to sort of touch on there?
Oh, yeah. It's more football related, of course. I would like to have my own club.
That would be pretty. That's a pretty cool answer.
Yeah, I think it's always in the back of your mind, isn't it? You kind of want your own club. You want to... football is a very big part of my life. If you know Portugal, football is a very big deal in Portugal. So if you're a boy, mostly boys, when they're kids, it's just football. It's just you just play football all the time. You just see football, you watch, you listen to it on the radio, you see it on the streets when there's big games. You just, so yeah, it would be really cool to, if I could not have my own club, I would at least finance the one I play for. Nice. That would be cool as well.
Nice. That's pretty cool. All right, I want to get back to the football in a minute. Okay, so my sort of penultimate, like, big quote-unquote question is there anyone or anything that inspires you that you would like to give a little shout out to? Now, I always preface this with you can be inspired by multiple things and multiple people. You know, a lot of the times I speak to people on the show and they have lots of amazing people behind them, but I always like to give you the space to just shout maybe like one or two of them out just this is your platform, right? That's how I kind of see the show.
Okay, I see. On a more personal sort of note, I think inspiration, it's always the same. It always comes most of the times it comes from your parents. They're your main source of inspiration. You're like, you see how they try to raise you right. You kind of want to make them proud. So, that's basically, those are my two go-tos. I look at them and I feel I want them to be happy with my choices. I want them to be proud of me. That's basically the standard, not standard answer, which is it's just a real answer, but it's maybe the most boring answer. Are they more, I don't know, psychosocial or parasocial? That's what I mean. In a more parasocial way, I was very inspired by three great people. I would say Kojima, of course. Mm-hmm. Because of the way, for the peeps that don't know, Hideo Kojima is the main developer behind Metal Gear Solid, the saga, and the lore, the game, basically everything. And once I got really into the game, I really wanted to find out more about the person behind the game because I think it's something that you always do. You kind of want to see what kind of person develops this type of game. Why putting so much time in it?
And, it's a real sign of endearment, like when you like something to then go and like look at who designed it, and so just want to know more about everyone involved with it.
Exactly, yeah, and that's what I did with Kojima, and found out a lot of stuff about him. Not all good, not all bad. That's always how it works, but. He, for those of you who don't know, Metal Gear was his last. He's his first game and his last because he didn't. He worked on a couple of projects before, like Snatcher and all that stuff. But Metal Gear was his first like game that he actually developed by himself, and he was gonna be letting go from Konami, which is the company he worked for. He wasn't very. Like his parents, his family, being a game developer back then wasn't like a job that was seen as a great job or a job to be proud of. So he kind of stuck to it. He stuck to his guns. He knew he was onto something big. And there's a lot of lessons to learn from that, to believe in yourself, to surround yourself by knowledgeable people as well. Mm-hmm. Be smart enough to know. I think once I look back and think about this stuff, it takes a big man to accept when you don't know a lot of stuff and when you're kind of put your ego aside and say, yeah, just let's learn a little bit here. And I can clearly see that Kojima did that. And I loved finding out how he developed the games and how he built this great team. And it is amazing to learn about and how much he loves everything that he's created and his fans and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was my first big inspiration in a more digital world. And then, of course, again, I'm a big football nerd. So I've seen one as a player and one as a manager. You can probably guess the two of them. I was a little kid, of course. I played football since I've been playing football since I was 5, or even earlier, probably. But once I saw Steven Gerrard, I was really interested in knowing more about him. And as a person, as a player, he's kind of what everyone should be, or everyone should aspire to be. You know, he's a very respectable person. He's very educated. He's focused, hardworking. You see a guy that has been loyal to a club for 19 years or more. I don't remember for sure. It is something that I will never forget. A person that can do literally everything on a pitch. You kind of learn by example. You kind of get fascinated seeing what he could do. And as a little kid that you want to play football, you kind of look at that and say, yeah, that's how I want to be. That's how hard I should work. I should maybe stay in practice behind a little bit, practice my Steven Gerrard shots from outside the box a little bit more. Maybe I could do it sometimes. You know, so in a more sporting but still personal level, CVG. And of course, I think lately, I think it's inevitable. If you're a Reds fan, if you're a football fan in general, you know what's coming. The big man, the big German. I think Klopp, it's an inspiration that goes behind football, but above and beyond. I'm lost for words. It goes beyond football. He's just an inspiration. He's just a genius. I would say a genius, honestly. He knows what to say and how to say. And every time he speaks, you just want to listen. He could be speaking for, I don't know, 5-10 hours about movies or music, and I'll be listening. I wouldn't say a thing. I would just listen closely, learn, and ask as many questions as I could when I had the chance. He's a very smart man. He knows how to motivate people. He knows how to bring the best out of people. I can tell that. And it's just a pleasure to listen to him.
He is, and we're very lucky to have him. I think, you know, you can say this about a lot of like people, especially in football, but like, you'd love to just sit him down and have a pint and just talk football and just extract that knowledge. Like, his knowledge of the game must be so vast. Obviously, you know, we're all a bit gushy. We're both Red fans, we're both Liverpool fans.
Yeah, that's not, it isn't biased. I have that idea. But I think with Klopp is more like, I would love to know what he knows about football, but it's not just football. It's man management, it's... His views in the world usually are spot on. Every time he talks about something that's not football related, he nails it.
Well, I feel like a really recent example of this was when he was talking about like COVID vaccinations.
Example.
Like, I'm very pro vaccination. I'm very pro mask. You know, I don't think I would not want to risk anyone else's safety for the sake of my own quote unquote freedoms. And he just very succinctly sort of said, well, like, you know, the reason drink driving laws exist is because if you're drunk, you know, you've had a few beers and you're like, I want to drive my car home. Society kind of goes, no, it's not safe. It's in our interest that you don't drive.
Exactly.
You know, it's the same principle. It's like, well, I refuse to get the vaccine. It's like, okay, like, not that people have to be forced to, but like, it's in the benefit of everyone else that you do. Like, it's not an infringement of freedom, you know? He puts it much better than I do, but like...
No, but that's the gist of it. And that's the way I think he's a genius, because he takes these really hard to understand, hard to discuss, very hard to touch on subjects, and he can make them sound reasonable and easy to understand and easy to get behind.
I don't know about you, but if I was like a football manager in my press conference and like a person of the press asked me that, I'd be a bit like,
next question.
Yeah. And he's just there, just like, okay.
And you see them all the time. You see people do that. You see people say, oh, we're here to talk about football. We're not here to talk about COVID. And that's fine. That's the way to go about your work. I understand that. But he understands that life is much more than football. But the two aren't mutually exclusive. So he kind of brings everyone back together. That's genius. That's something that I would love to know how to do.
It was a bit before like my time, but the people draw parallels between Klopp and Shankly, and I think it's that Shankly quote that I think he is also referenced. But it's like there are more important things in life than football, but for those 90 minutes, football is the most important thing in life.
Exactly,
and that's how it should be, and it should all matters for the highs and the lows of it, and you enjoy that entertainment. And then after that, everything else, football is then not important. That's kind of like the Shankly ethos.
Yeah, I've seen that quote actually in a video from Liverpool FC where Klopp says something similar lately. And that's basically what I kind of don't like about football nowadays. It's all very stat-driven, very money-driven. We kind of forget that it's... Ultimately, it's a game and it's an entertainment thing. You kind of going to the stadium used to be like, you know, a special thing. Like you used to just get in there, you give your ticket, and then you see all these chairs and all these people, the flags, the lights. You get those floodlights. You get the smell of the grass. You get these guys just running around, and for 90 minutes or more, 95, whatever. It's okay to not think about anything else. You just want to enjoy the show. You want to see something that you like seeing. And that's what I love about this guy, is that he gets that. He gets that it's more than just winning trophies and winning football matches. It's about giving the guys that maybe you're not in the stadium, maybe just watching at home in a different country, like yours truly. And you kind of want to have the same experience. You kind of want to... be involved in it. You kind of want to, for 90 minutes, you just want to forget about everything and just think about football and be entertained. And I mean, he nails it.
I mean, I'm assuming that if you're not a football fan, you've maybe stopped listening or skipped over this part entirely. But like,
yeah.
I mean, I always sort of...
My apologies.
I always draw a comparison just to try and help maybe like grasp the idea a little bit. Like, it's the kind of feeling you get when you're at a gig and everyone in there is having a great time and they're really feeling it and there's that mutual energy. It's like that, but there's more stakes because like your team could win or lose. There are things at stake. And as you say, remove the ugliness of the money. Try and put that to one side for a minute. But like there is, especially playing, I think I feel it playing as much as I do watching. But like that emotion. Okay, so another example that we can use that's really like, I remember bombing into your chat. You were streaming... affectionately one Sunday afternoon. Liverpool were playing West Brom last season in the quest to try and secure fourth place for the Champions League qualification. I remember I saw you online, I had it on mute, I was listening to the game, and unbelievably, in like the 93rd minute, like Liverpool FC goalkeeper Alisson Becker jumps up and scores a header from a corner. This is unheard of. It's very rare. And I just remember falling off my chair and like smashing the keys on my keyboard being like, Alisson! Ah! And I just derailed your entire stream.
I love that stuff. Again, my stream is very easy to derail. It's very easy. I like to talk about all sort of stuff. Again, it's pretty much, I see it the way Klopp sees the game. Like I see my stream as just, if you come by, it's just space out for a little bit. Just enjoy your day. Just talk about whatever. As long as it's, you know, reasonable. It's a fair subject, as long as there's
no trauma. No toxic positivity.
Exactly. Yeah. As long as it's okay, I just wanted to have a good time, and I distinctly remember that moment because I wanted to watch it on stream, but I couldn't.
Yeah,
because of course, a copyright infringement. But it's one of the things. I think those moments happened to this team because of that manager and because of his work and his belief that is behind the team that is crazy.
And I just remember it because it was such a big moment for the team and the club. But like, I was in your chat. You were the streamer. You were dealing with this information live, like processing it, like as a Liverpool fan.
I was jumping up inside. I was just, I want to see it. I want to see it.
There was like other people in the chat being like, oh yeah, like the football's going on. Like I think someone said like their boyfriend was celebrating, like going ecstatic.
Yeah, and I remember like, Holly's boyfriend. Yeah,
like that was, like feeling of just like that sense of community, that ability to bring people together from like all over, just in that single like moment, just really I think epitomizes that feeling you get in football.
Those are the moments that you remember, to be honest. Yeah. I'm not going to remember the stream I finished. I don't know. The stream I played a game for 3 hours. I'm going to remember the moments where, I don't know, I talked about something that matter. I was thinking about a goal that I haven't seen yet, and it was very important.
Yeah.
I remember all that stuff.
Oh, sorry. I thought I'd mute my mic there. Oh, whoops-a-daisy.
No problem. But yeah, I apologize for the football references. Every time we talk, we go into very deep about football. But
it's all right. I had one of my previous episodes was a colleague of mine, Daniel Walker. He's actually studying sport and concussion in psychology. Mm-hmm. So like we had a big chat about like heading rules and stuff. He's actually a City fan, but like a City fan before they were rich.
They exist,
like an actual City fan. So we had a great chat. We put VAR to the sword on episode, and that's part of what I love about this podcast, right? My last sort of like quick, like sort of formal sort of questions for you are quick fire.
Go for it.
So they are. You're going on, and this is kind of funny because I know you've just recently been on vacation. but you're going on an island retreat. I don't like to say you've been shipwrecked or you've been sent. That's quite a negative connotation. But you're going away. You're just saying, right, that's it. I need a break. And you're allowed to take one sort of film or like DVD box set with you. You're allowed to take one album, one book, and then one video game. What do you take? What are your picks?
I think the video game is
that's, you know, maybe a given.
Let's just keep that one. Okay, one film. One film is hard to choose. One film that I wouldn't mind watching, I guess it would be...
You can have, like, there's some lineage. You can have, like, a show box set or something. Like,
I'll give you a film and I'll give you a series then.
Okay.
I would take definitely The Prestige with Christian Bale because I love that movie. Not many times I see it. No. I'll take Interstellar. I like Interstellar. Oh. I've seen that movie a lot more times. So Interstellar would keep me busy.
I mean, you could spend a lifetime trying to understand that movie.
But it's just, I remember I watched that movie in the cinema 5 times. I went to the cinema 5 times because I was really impressed with the sound in that movie. The sound and the absence of sound. Like, of course, the movie is based in space, so the silence is deafening. And every time there's noise, it's just, I remember getting chills all the time. Third time I'm watching, I'm still getting chills. I'm like, okay, I gotta come back again. This is something special. So yeah, I saw that movie 5 times in the cinema, and I don't regret it. Every time I went there, it was a great experience. So yeah, definitely Interstellar. And as a series, The Sopranos. I recently finished The Sopranos, and I feel bad that I haven't seen it back then, because... I can see how much of a talent James Gandolfini is. I can see what the series itself created. Like, if there's no Sopranos, there's no Breaking Bad. That's basically it. And I was really impressed. Dialogue, everything. The humor in it. It has a bit of everything. I loved it.
I need to watch Sopranos.
You too. Yeah, it's insane. It's really good. It's really good. I watched it. I was like, why didn't I watch this before? Now I have no one to discuss it with. I remember distinctively talking about this on stream. And Zach was like, we can talk about it. And I was like, thank you. Thank you. I need to talk about this Honestly, when you watch it, like, I need to talk about this thing. It is an amazing series. I definitely recommend it.
It is on my list, don't worry.
A book I would bring, the one I'm reading, so I can finish it. I finished it a couple of times, but I do recommend it. It's The Art of War by Sun Tzu. I've read it a couple of times. It is a short book, but it's a very interesting one.
So what was it, The Art of War?
The Art of War by Sun Tzu.
Okay.
It's basically a book about this general, very old general, in the, like, I don't know, maybe before Christ or after, I don't remember exactly, but they basically took his war strategies and put it in a book, and once you read it, you realize that they can basically be used for your day-to-day work and how to deal with people, how to deal with conflict, how to one-up your enemies, all that stuff. It is, honestly, I've read it. I think I finished it like twice. I'm going on the third time. I'm about half. Nice. And every time I read it, I realize something new and something that I can use for work or for dealing with. It is scary how good of an interpretation and how good it can be used in non-war stuff. So I guess that's just leave
album. For the sake of
music,
The sake of the list, well, the video game is Metal Gear Solid, right?
Yeah. Of course.
Throw in special missions for free, so you're not bored.
Can I take Metal Gear Solid 3 as well?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you the Legacy Collection because that technically includes everything. So we'll give you that.
Okay, I'm good. I'm good then. I don't need the rest. But yeah, the book would be Art of War by Sun Tzu.
The album.
So the album is hard to choose.
The big one I see, like, people kind of turning over in their mind is a greatest hits album or like a singular album. That's the big decision people seem to make.
Hmm. Yeah. I wouldn't take the greatest hits, I'll tell you that.
Oh, okay. Alright.
No, to me it's just two very big bands that I listen to a lot that I have some reason connect with is the Foo Fighters and the Arctic Monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
Very different bands. Very different. The style of music is very different, but I guess I would have to say Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace by the Foo Fighters would be the album. If I'm going Arctic Monkeys, his favorite Worst Nightmare.
Okay.
But yeah, I would take the Foos.
Okay.
Sorry, Alex. I know you're British. I know you're proud of your music, but yeah, I'd have to take the Foos, the Foo Fighters. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's fair enough. So, I mean, look, you know, this is one of those we've literally chatted for hours upon hours, and I'm very, very conscious and very grateful of your time. The last question I have to ask for you is, do you have any questions for me? I've been asked my, like, desert island kind of things
mm-hmm.
a couple times already, but is there anything else that you'd like to ask me?
Oh, loads. How much time do you have?
I usually limit it to one question.
One question, okay. So I would throw one of your questions back at you, but would be with if you had, like, all the resources... You know where I'm going with this. All the resources, what we do.
Well, I mean,
would you be your second idea, your second big plan?
Research wise, I've said, like, I would do research on Celeste. I would just get people to play it, and I would, you know, longitudinally, like, over a long period of time, chart mm-hmm. their experience with it, because it's every track is a banger. The story is about mental health. The game is amazing. It's wonderful, and I would want to give Matt Makes Games all the money because it deserves it. I've said that before though, so I think, but like, honestly, like, I think if I just, like, had, like, this, you know, if I could just start, like, a business, I think taking, like, a leaf from your idea, I think I would like to start something very akin to, I feel really cheesy kind of, like, saying this already, but, like, you know, Safe in Our World is a charity that I'm privileged to say I'm a champion for, mm-hmm. you know, a mental health charity that works around the gaming spaces. You know, take this, you know, do amazing things in their US base. But like, kind of like, really, I would like to take like Blind Psyche, like in and turn that into a business, a team of like psychologists and developers. Not like commercial to make money, but I would have like a great emphasis on like an inclusion and diversity policy. I would want to hire people who were disabled. I would want to hire people from underrepresented communities that maybe struggle to get jobs elsewhere. And, you know, because I've got unlimited resources, I can pay all these people wages and I can make sure we have therapists on staff and, you know, all the wonderful things and produce great content that is pro mental health and, you know, allow people that can't afford mental health care to come in and visit, you know, clinicians for free, but still pay them a great wage. And like just having that, like just a one-stop shop, like in every city, there's like a Blind Psyche that you can go to. And, you know, that, you know what I mean? Like that kind of like,
yeah, definitely
mental health resources for all. If I had infinite money.
Yeah, that's a very that's a very noble cause. I'm now I feel bad that I said a football football team.
It's meant to be lighthearted.
No, but I like your idea. Maybe I should invest in you. That's...
It sounds like really cheesy to be like, I take this UK because I like swoon over.
No, not at all. But... it doesn't sound cheesy at all. It sounds sounds like the sort of thing you'd do. Sounds like a very responsible, very nice thing that someone should do. So I hope you get all that funding, to be honest.
You know, it's just like, you know, there are so many great people doing great things. And like, even just like in the Twitterverse, the people that I you know, connect with and even like a very parasocial level, like I would want to bring all those people together and put them in like a, put them in a pot, you know what I mean? And like make a beautiful space to just send everyone to. And like, and because we're, you know, we're talking blue sky and money's no object, just make sure everyone is on really like a healthy amount of income and they can live like a sustainable life and have the time and space to do what they want to do.
Yeah. That's
it. You know, game developers included, you know, like there's a seat at the table for everyone. I would definitely have an emphasis on inclusion. But
Don't worry, mate. If I get rich, I definitely get a spot for you. Don't worry.
Hey, I mean, you know, like we need some more cool stealth games, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely, dude. Hopefully I can contribute to it one day.
For sure. We'll see. But yeah, that is going to bring this episode to a close. So all that remains for me to do is to thank you for coming on and sharing the space with me, Marco. I appreciate
thanks for having me.
You know, like as I say, we've chatted a whole bunch for hours and hours, and you're definitely on the list to come back to shoot more shit. But for now, we will say goodbye. For our video viewers, we will flick over to the ending screen when I can find it. There it is. Yeah, so thank you everyone for listening and watching. Take it easy and goodbye. Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Psyched to Be With You. I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. As ever, if you did enjoy it, please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really, really helps. If you want to keep up with all things Blind Psyche, check out the episode description for a link, or you can go direct to linktr.ee/blindpsyche. Thank you so much for listening. As ever, look after your mind, body, and soul, and I will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.